Welcome into the noon hour here of Leafs Lunch on TSN 1050, streaming online, tsn.ca, and on the iHeartRadio app. No TV for the week. It is the French Open happening on all the TSN stations. So you just have to hear our lovely voices. Andy Petrillo alongside Dave Poulin and Craig Button. Are
just
you guys
the lovely voices?
Are you sharing secrets over there? What are you doing?
We actually are talking about you, Andy.
Well, that's not right.
How are you?
We have to strategize.
You know what? Seriously. I mean, that's well put. That is extremely well put, Craig.
I feel like you guys are the PA right now and I'm the NHL. I don't like
the way
this is going.
Why do you say that?
You're
making it sound like we're adversaries. You don't have to be an adversary to strategize.
Really?
Yeah.
I was not included in whatever you guys were whispering about.
You had work to do. You were doing work.
You were introducing us.
You were bringing us back from a break and doing your job.
Look at that look right there.
Look
at that look right there. That looked
tremendously well.
What I really want to say to you, I can't say on the radio.
We were having a sidebar conversation.
Sidebar.
Whatever.
Sidebar. Save that look for when we're on TV. Save that look for when some guy just turns and glances at a 60-inch HD and says, oh, my God, that's a scary look.
The two of you, it's like
don't
trying to herd
Andy.
Cats. I swear to God.
I like your watch. What's with the new watch there?
I noticed that.
That's a big watch.
I like big watches.
My mother loves you.
I love your mom.
Yeah, she loves you. And anyway, she's got a big watch, so I saw you with the big watch.
Look at you trying to just change the subject.
Well, we were strategizing.
Maybe I should call your mom, and maybe we can strategize.
Yeah, Craig, have you met someone?
Okay, now that is a game of zero-sum for me.
That's the world's colliding. That's George Costanza talking about the world's colliding. There, yeah. Look, hey, where's Mark Rowe when I need him? I actually used a Seinfeld reference. He'd be so proud.
Do you think if Andy were on either the NHL or the NHLPA side that they'd be going to the Olympics? Because she's going to get it done.
We're going
She's
to the Olympics.
She's a peacemaker. Look at her. Look at that angelic face.
Well, I think Andy's going to the Olympics, right?
I'm going to the Olympics. You're either coming with me or you get left behind.
Yeah, that's right. And we'll miss you over there. That's what Andy will be saying.
Yeah. Later, sayonara. But it is sad. You know what? It's really sad that it appears more so than ever. If ever there was a glimmer of hope, and I admit I was holding on to it, I thought the door was a wee bit open, it got slammed in my face. And you can't really blame Bettman or Bill Daly. They've been saying it all along. We had Bill Daly on a couple weeks ago, and I even asked him how difficult it is to control the message when you say one thing, and then you have the IIHF saying another, and you have the organizers of the PyeongChang Olympics saying something else that gives people hope. Like, that has to be very irritating, because the NHL has always stood by their answer. And Gary Bettman, once again, he was asked about the Olympics, because that's a big topic. And I know, again, we always say, why are we talking about the Olympics? But we know it leads into the CBA and those negotiations, and are we headed for another lockout? So we will discuss that, but I wanted to get Gary Bettman first on the NHL not participating in the Olympics. This is what he had to say about teams not going to the 2018 games.
6 weeks ago, we were very clear and definitive that the teams had no interest in going to the Olympics in PyeongChang. And I know that there have been a variety of comments either from Rene Fazel of the International Ice Hockey Federation or from representatives of the Players Association suggesting that this was still an open issue. It is not and has not been. You want to add to that? No. I hope that was definitive enough.
So there you go.
Okay, so was that before or after the statement that I'm reading?
Okay, yeah, I know. This is where it really starts to get confusing.
Because this paragraph that I'm reading right here, that he said at some point yesterday.
Yeah. He was also asked about...
Describe this to the listeners.
Yeah, so obviously we also heard during this whole, are they going to go or not going to go to the Olympics, that the NHL did propose if you extend the CBA by 3 years, then we'll go to the Olympics.
And we're guaranteed 9 years of labor peace.
And that's what we're guaranteed. And I think that's what fans just want. Like, at this point, just give us labor peace, right? And we know that the PA turned around and said, no, like, our participation in the Olympics should have nothing to do with the CBA. The two shouldn't go hand in hand, because we also know the big sticking point for the players is escrow, which we'll get into in a bit. And they have the ability to open up this CBA again in the fall of 2019.
How is this not a negotiation?
Good question.
This
So do you want to actually hear that clip? So this is the clip that Dave Poulin is referring to when it comes to, it wasn't really as open and closed as Gary Bettman is making it sound.
Like the paragraph you just heard.
Can I be fair to Gary, though? And like, I mean, he said 6 weeks ago.
Yes.
It couldn't have been more clear. So this happened.
This is before that.
Yeah, this is that. So, I mean, he was very clear 6 weeks ago. And then the World Championships happened. And then the famous quote, in my view, by Rene Fassel was, only death is final. Well, guess what? Olympic participation in Pyeongchang by the NHL players is also final. Not
Jeez,
happening.
I feel like we need to have a memorial for it. But this is what Gary Bettman had to say about what he proposed to the PA that they turned down.
What then ensued in that meeting wasn't a demand, wasn't a proposal. It was a suggestion. It was talking points. And we said, you know, if we're both going to give up our reopeners and we extend by 3 years, we could encompass two Olympics, two World Cups, two Ryder Cups, build the international business together in a way we hope to, and do a whole host of other initiatives. And under the framework of a robust international calendar and labor peace for 9 years, maybe I've got something that will persuade the teams to reconsider their view of the Olympics. Wasn't a demand. I didn't even know if it was going to fly. Now, what you may recall happened is we had a board meeting in December, and somehow in advance of that, it was leaking out that we had made a demand of a 3-year extension to go to Pyeongchang, which was never the case. It all got public. I started getting calls from clubs saying, what is it you're doing?
Okay, so he's explaining the timeline of everything. So when it first came up, we know that it all started with Thomas Bach, IOC president, right? Comes on in, says, we're not paying for the travel costs anymore. Everything that we were basically covering for the last five Olympics that you were here, we're not going to cover anymore. So Bill Daly, when he was even on a couple weeks ago, said, we always had owners that were on the fence about Olympic participation. That pushed them over the edge. Now we shut down our season. We shut down our business. And that was part of it, that the IOC would pay for travel accommodations and accommodations and help us out because we're doing them a favor as well. So when the IOC said no, this is where this all started. Then from there, yeah, there was a lot of pushback. There was a lot of talking going on. Gary Bettman here making it clear that it was a suggestion. Hey, if you extend the CBA by 3 years, maybe we can accomplish all this stuff and we can all be happy. And there you go. Suggestion, PA not buying it. We are where we are. To your point, Craig, 6 weeks ago, they finally said, all right, enough's enough. We're just going to shut the door. We know that yesterday, because we also said, if you want to talk about nothing's final but death, we know the nail in the coffin was always going to be when they announced the site for next year's All-Star. Because All-Star doesn't happen when there are the Olympics. So they announced that Tampa, the Tampa Bay Lightning, will be next year's host of the All-Star weekend festivities. It's done. It's absolutely done. So there's the timeline there. But now when he says something like that, I do find it interesting because Gord Miller has said time and time again that escrow is going to be the sword on which the players die. Should they have accepted...
I hope you die on withholding tax.
Yeah.
It's an accounting mechanism. So die on an accounting mechanism.
It's an artificial inflator.
Mm-hmm.
It pretends that the salary cap is bigger than it is.
The CBA is very clearly written, of which the players agreed. They get 50% of hockey-related revenue. Not a penny more, not a penny less. And all escrow is an accounting mechanism. Mm-hmm. So come up with a better accounting mechanism to make sure that if they get more, how they pay back, or if they get less, what they get back. I mean, they get interest if they get money back. They've agreed to that, too. So do you want to know something? I think escrow is, if that's the hill they want to die on, I can't think of anything more ridiculous.
To simplify as cleanly as we can, when hockey-related revenue was at its maximum was when the Canadian dollar was really strong.
Mm-hmm.
Because the seven Canadian teams drive so much of the hockey-related revenue, okay? And that's when, if you look back, when Kane and Tave signed those contracts, the salary cap was going up. That's what it was doing at that point. It was going to be a less percentage. But as it flattened and as the Canadian dollar devalued, there was an artificial inflator. So take a summer. Take the summer of 2010, okay? And say, just for practical purposes, that summer, the cap is going to go down. Oh, unless, or stay flat, unless you put this 5% artificial inflator in there, then the cap will go up. Then the free agents from the summer of 2010, we'll have a larger pool.
Yep.
Okay? Well, they did it. 2011 rolls around. There's a new group of free agents. Well, wait a second. We did it for the free agents in 2010. We have to do it for the free agents in 2011. Meanwhile, everybody else, entry-level contracts, long-term contracts, saying, well, how does this benefit us? Because we're paying escrow on a fixed amount that we'd already agreed to without the inflator. But the way it's been able to roll is each summer, there is a significant enough free agent with a significant enough agent who says, we have to do it for my guy because we did it for everybody else. Now we're 6 or 7 years into that artificial inflator. The cap is at an artificial number. And that's why they're paying escrow, because it's higher than 50%.
You're guaranteed 50%. They agreed to 50% of hockey-related revenue.
Was
not
that
a penny
clear?
More, not a penny less.
Well, and that was very clear, and that's where I wanted to then ask you.
So
because
come up with a different accounting mechanism.
Because we know yesterday that's what, you know, Bill Daly and Bettman have been saying. If the cap stays flat, then escrow will remain where it is. We don't have to worry about it going up. But now the PA has a decision to make whether or not they're going to enact that 5% escalator, which you just discussed, which we know they did last year.
Tell me who the big free agents are this summer.
So,
tell me how much pull they have. Tell me how big the pool is going to be.
How much pressure is within the PA then? Because to your point, Craig Button was a free agent 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. We enacted the 5% so you could maximize your next contract. Now all of a sudden you're a free agent the following year. Now you're like, hey, wait a second, I did it for you. Now you better do it for me. Well, now it's my turn. And here we are in this year. And I'm like, hey, guys, I kept saying 5% increase the last 2 years. You better do it for me now.
The truth
because
is
now
the matter,
I'm a free
Andy.
Agent and I have to maximize my next contract.
Okay, so let me ask
the cap
you
is not really let 73 million.
So what hill are they dying on? They're dying on a hill. Wait a second. This is going to be a labor
apparently
negotiation.
It's an escalator one.
No, wait a second. It's a hill they're going to die on against the NHL and labor negotiations, so-called, based on actions they're doing. You know what that's like, in my view? That's like complaining about the higher interest rate on a cash withdrawal on your credit card. How can it be a higher cash withdrawal? How can it be a higher interest rate on a cash withdrawal?
Great
right?
analogy.
Whose fault is it? It's not the credit cards company. They put it there. Mm-hmm. They agreed to this. Like I said, I can't think of anything more ridiculous.
Great analogy. That really is. Because it's borrowed money to make the cap look bigger that summer. That's what the inflator is.
And I know it's at least for me, I know sometimes my, and I said it off the top of the show, right? It's like that fight the power. You don't, like whenever you hear about owner management, you always want to fight an authoritative figure. You never want to give in. But then when I hear that you could have extended by 3 years, it could have meant two more Olympics, two more World Cups, possibly this Ryder Cup, when it means labor peace, I'm sitting
that's
there going,
a negotiation.
When I'm sitting there and I'm looking at that and I'm saying, how could that not have been agreed to? Like, there is a part of me that says, yeah, we want to hate Bettman and Bill Daly.
Do
you want to
hate
the NHL? Just simply
salaries,
because of being
average,
an authoritative average, figure is what I'm saying.
Average
but
salaries have gone up. So,
yeah.
Like, hate the guy that's helped you increase your average salaries, right? That's wonderful. I mean, again, misplaced hate, misplaced anger. Go ahead. And let me just say this, and I don't think I've ever said this, but I'm going to say it right here today. The IOC should be rolling out the red carpet for the National Hockey League. Five times, five Olympics, they've closed down their league. No other league does that. The NHL has done that. And how it affects their business, what they thought they could get out of it, the IOC should be rolling out a red carpet for it. And for as far as I'm concerned, good for the NHL to say no more unless we're gaining something out of this. And if the players want to go to the Olympics, you give something too.
I just
the
want
NHL
that.
Has been giving and giving and giving.
I just want that to marinate a little bit. Let's just think about that. And
$73 million is not the salary cap. If escrow is 15%, yeah,
that's right.
It's 15% less than 73 million. Yeah. That's what the salary cap.
Well, and that's what I mean. I'm talking about the psychology of humans. It's just your instinct is to want to hate the higher ups. But then if you actually were to step back and look at the situation, you're sitting there going,
you've done this yourself.
You're going, wait a second. No. Yeah. There's a lot of what Bettman said that makes sense to me. And I've always said, if you have to go back to the beginning. And it's Thomas Bach who started this mess.
That's why I brought up the IOC.
And this is another thing that I'm curious to see what the IOC will do, if they actually have a backbone or a wishbone. Because you sit here and you come in with all this bravado and say what you say to the NHL. Then you walk away and let the NHL and the PA and the IIHF have to deal with this mess that you ended up creating. They have not shut the door on 2022.
Yeah, but 2022, we're not talking about 2022. Why would anybody shut the door on it?
But what I'm saying is, like, now all of a sudden you're going to, because the reason why I say this is because I think the IOC's argument is weak as to why they say we're not paying anymore. If we pay for you, how do we explain it to other federations? Then other federations are going to make demands, this and whatever. Okay, so now if you don't shut the door on 2022, now knowing that the NHL is not going in 2018.
Pick your Olympics.
What's that message you're sending to
pick
other federations?
You
can pick whatever Olympics you want to be a part of. So that's why I call their argument weak, the IOC argument weak. Anyways, we're going to get...
I'm not suggesting either that they... I said they should be rolling out the red carpet. There's a lot of different ways to attract the NHL to your Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't always have to be just on a monetary thing. Because
yeah.
The NHL, like I said, the only league that shut down the league five times.
Mm-hmm. All right, we're going to have our TSN hockey insider Darren Dreger join us. We'll get a little bit more into that, but we'll get back to a game one of the Stanley Cup final that was played yesterday in Pittsburgh with the Penguins coming away with a 5-3 win over the Nashville Predators. As you continue to listen here to Leafs Lunch on TSN 1050 and stream online, tsn.ca. Annie Petrillo alongside Dave Poole and Craig Button. Craig teaching me how to
look pleasant in a passport photo without smiling.
I have to go for my passport photos today because I have to, even though my passport doesn't expire until spring of next year, in order to go, speaking of Olympics, to go to Pyeongchang, you have to have at least a passport that's valid until October of 2018.
6 months, right?
Yeah, so I'm like, yeah, forget it. I'll just go and renew it now. I'll just renew it early. But yeah, you're not allowed to smile. You're just not allowed to do anything. So I'm like, how do I just not look like Tiger Woods in my passport photo?
As we look up at him right now.
Oh, geez, there he is. How do I look somewhat decent without smiling and that'll take everyone
just,
off?
My gut instinct is that you will look better than that.
I just have to.
As is.
My gut instinct is, unless the photographer really, really... You know,
talk about breaking
makes you
a
mad
camera.
I will break that lens. I'll be like, I do not look like that. There is something wrong with your
take
lens.
Take my picture again.
Fix it. Yeah, so I have to go for my passport photo.
Do you have a 5-year passport now? You can get a 10-year now.
I do. I know. I'm going to get the 10-year because
I have a 10.
Well, with all the traveling, you know, we do for work and we go to a lot of these different places.
You can fill a passport in
10 years. Yeah, you just have to.
Well, what I do is I look at the picture, and if it's a good picture, I go 10 years. If it's not a good picture, I go 5.
That's the veteran move right there. All right, let's welcome in now our TSN Hockey Insider, Darren Dreger. This Hockey Insider is brought to you by Finance It. How you doing, Dregs?
I'm doing well. I'm at the Pittsburgh Penguins practice facility watching a rather optional Penguins skate this morning.
How many people are on the ice?
Maybe a dozen players, but a dozen including Sidney Crosby, so it's not a bad place to start.
All right. So one of the questions I asked the guys earlier on in the show was, after game one, are you still feeling pretty good about yourself if you're the Nashville Predators, even though you walked away with the loss? And if you're the Pittsburgh Penguins, are you, even though you walked away with the win, maybe scratching your head a little bit going, we got completely outplayed in that game?
Yeah, more than scratching your head, Andy. You're right. You know, the Penguins, to a man, weren't happy with they're thrilled with the outcome, but they know that they stole a game versus the Nashville Predators. There weren't too many smiles on the faces of the Penguins in that Pens room post-game. So, you know, they know they've got to tighten things up. They didn't love their level of compete in the second and third period. They know that they've got to be more aggressive on the forecheck, and they felt like they made the defensive part of the Nashville Predators game from the start of the second period through two periods a lot better than it needs to be. So I would expect... a bit grittier and more high-octane effort from the Penguins in Game 2.
We were debating a lot Gary Bettman's comments about the offside review, and obviously, I mean, what is he going to say? He said he was very pleased with it, talked about offsides being down by 13%, also just made a comment that, you know, maybe the officials would be more willing to let it go, knowing that it can be corrected afterwards. That's a whole other argument unto itself. Craig and Dave don't agree with that because they would say no official would ever purposely let something go or make a mistake. But how do you feel about the way the offside review has gone? Do you think it is something that needs to be tweaked and adjusted? And if so, how so?
Yeah, I think it needs to be tweaked. I don't believe that this is the spirit that was intended when they first adopted the notion of the offside review. But I can tell you this much, rewinding the clock, you know, this is predictable. And I remember having conversations with veteran executives from hockey operations who warned that this would be the end result. It was initially introduced, of course, to eliminate the egregious offside. But coaches coach to win in every sense. And it quickly became, you know, an opportunity for coaches to gain some form of advantage. So how will it be tweaked? That's debatable, frankly, debatable. If it'll be tweaked is debatable. But, you know, there's been some talk among general managers. Maybe, you know, you rather than just simply losing your timeout, they add a minor penalty. If, you know, you get the challenge wrong, that seems a little harsh to me, but it might curb it. At the end of the day, you know, it's about getting it right versus what's wrong. And we in television know this. Let's use last night as an example here. If we find out 10 minutes after the fact, we have the video evidence to show that the play was offside, yet they couldn't determine through hockey operations or having a look at it, second look at it at ice level, that it was offside, and the goal stands. How does that make the NHL look? So whether it's a whisker offside or a foot offside, you know, the view is offside. So I don't predict that there'll be any change in the near future, but obviously there'll be a lot more talk about the potential of change.
Dregs, let's flip back onto the ice now. So what time was the optional skate? Was it noon today?
Yeah, they just got out there about 5 minutes ago.
And so you're a young player on that team, even a year in. You're Connor Sheary or Brian Rust or you're Jake Guentzel in his first year or Carter Rowney. You walk into the morning skate and you get there at about 10:30 this morning and you see one guy's gear is already kind of out of his locker because 87's going on the ice. How do you not go on the ice for an optional when 87 is going out there?
Yeah.
Like, talk about setting a tone. How do you not go out there?
Well, maybe by the time I get back into the arena area, they'll all be out there. But it was a 12:15 scheduled start to the skate. And you guys know better than I. Normally what happens is players are out there early. They're not late for the scheduled start of a practice, be it optional or otherwise. And, yeah, that's a tough one unless you've got a real good reason, namely you're being treated or there's some form of injury that you're tending to. But Guentzel was out there. I saw Russ, and I didn't see Connor Sheary, but I just walked out as we were coming into the segment. But
I just think
at
it's
one
interesting
point,
that
nine and then it jumped to 11 players.
Yeah, I just think it's interesting that 104 games into the year, whatever, that he's still setting the pace and driving
yeah.
it. And that's, to me, how obsessed he's been with winning this second cup right from day one of this season.
Yeah, no question about that. And, look, you can go back now better part of the year, you know, prior to the Stanley Cup win of Sidney Crosby and the Penguins last year. You know, he just upped it. You know, whoever got to Crosby to say, Sid, stop worrying about everything else. Just focus on the things that you need to do to be the best you can be is all we can ask. And, man, did he invest in that sense. And then he became obsessed with winning the Stanley Cup. And, you know, he won the Stanley Cup. And then the next thing was the World Cup. And, you know, he was superior, you know, in that international event. And, you know, then he reset and got ready for the regular season, faced adversity with injury there. But now in dealing with him even post-game, you can tell he loves the moment. Yeah, you know, he doesn't love the spotlight. He loves the moment and the opportunity of winning the ultimate championship again.
You know, watching the game last night a couple of times, Matt Murray had some collisions in the crease. Was there any sense in the building or even after the game that there might have been a little bit concern about some of those collisions and Matt Murray's health specifically?
Yeah, I mean, he was asked about it, Craig, as part of his post-game presser. You know, I suppose if there was any concern, maybe they wouldn't have ruled him out to the media, but he was sitting in a stall when we all walked in there, and he said he was fine. And, you know, the one instance in the first period, I think, was the most alarming if you're a Penguins fan, in that, you know, he got compressed against that post. And, you know, either it was a lower part of his anatomy, which all of us can feel the pain, it's squished against the metal pipe, or it was, you know, a hamstring or leg, but... You know, he didn't do any stretching, and other than having the TV timeout to rely on, where he skated over to the trainer, had a quick chat, he was back in the net and didn't seem too, you know, hampered by it one way or another. But he dismissed any form of injury after the game, as you'd expect.
something else we discussed. If ever there was any question that Pekarinen is the backbone of this team, you know, it was answered last night, because as well as the Nashville Predators played overall defensively, as we all know that stat of 37 minutes, no shot for Pittsburgh, and then being able to come back after being down 3-0, if Pekka isn't on his game, then the Nashville Predators have a problem. That question was definitely answered last night, wasn't it?
Yeah, yes and no. I honestly didn't love his game. That stretch, Andy, that you point out where the Pens went 37 minutes without a shot, Murray talked about, you know, not ever having to deal with that himself personally, but how he could imagine that that would be problematic as a goalie. I mean, you're in it. You're trying to stay razor sharp, and to not face a puck for 37 straight minutes is remarkable, frankly, especially against the high-flying Penguins. I mean, Pekarinen is an elite goaltender. Who's kidding who? And he's a big part of the reason why the Preds are in this Stanley Cup final. If you want to analyze the first three goals, you know, you're talking about power plays. You're talking about an own goal off Ekholm. Mm-hmm. So he didn't have much of a chance on that. I didn't love the Gensel goal, even though, you know, that was a terrific shot. Beat him short side for a big goalie. He looked like he made himself a little bit small, you know, on that particular play. So maybe we're splitting hairs, but I think both sides would think that, you know, to win this championship, everyone's going to have to be better, and that includes both goalies.
Mm-hmm. We're continuing to speak with our TSN Hockey insider, Darren Dreger. We were getting pretty heated there with some of the comments, obviously, that Gary Bettman was talking about, in particular, the Olympics, which automatically leads to the CBA. Have you heard anything? Because we now know the ball's in the court of the PA on whether or not they're going to enact that 5% escalator, because we know yesterday Bettman was saying that they would prefer to keep the cap flat, because that would keep escrow where it is and not have that increase. Have you heard anything coming out of the PA on what their intentions are?
No, they'll meet next week. I'd be surprised if they didn't enact that escalator, or at least a percentage of it. I mean, they have for how many consecutive years now? And, you know, yes, there might be an advantage to going forward with a flat cap, because, you know, the escrow might be minimized a little bit, but not a lot. But then you've got the flip side to that argument, which is, okay, well, what about contracts that need to be re-upped, or the unrestricted free agents who hit the market on July 1st? You know, if there's $76 million to spend for each NHL club as opposed to $73 million, you know that the teams historically who have been cap teams are going to spend that money. And that's good for the players, and that's good for the Players Association. So, yeah, there's a lot of discussions moving forward. Thankfully, the CBA stuff is just now starting to trickle in. But I thought one of Bettman's comments was very, very interesting. And I was standing at the back of the room with a couple of representatives from the Players Association who kind of snickered a little bit when Bettman tried to clarify that everything related to Olympic participation and the bigger international platform should not be viewed as a negotiation. Well, what is a negotiation? You know, the National Hockey League wanted the Players Association to give them something back in return for going to the Olympics in 2018. What they wanted was an extension to the CBA. Well, mm-hmm. by definition, isn't that a negotiation, or at least an attempt at a negotiation? So, you know, these two sides, for whatever reason, they never want to seem to come together on anything. So I think that the hockey world and the hockey fans have to brace for yet another potential work stoppage, and certainly a fight between these two sides going into 2019, and then the follow-up expiration of the current CBA.
We actually hit on that exact paragraph that you just described about the, you know, 9 years of labor peace and two World Cups and two Ryder Cups and two Olympics, and it
was a suggestion. Just,
it was parameters for talking points.
Yeah.
Spelt negotiation in my language, but
I don't like the thoughts of, you know, there not being labor peace, and I think I've said it from the start. Yeah. That's just what makes me cringe.
But you know what, Andy? Here's another thing, and it was made pretty clear to me by, you know, someone real close with the Players Association who said, you know, all along we've just assumed that the players they definitely want to participate in the Olympics. No question about that. The player in this Stanley Cup final wants to go to South Korea and continue to play on the Olympic stage. But, and this is a big one, not at the expense of a CBA extension. So that tells you what Don Fear and that group is aiming for.
All right, Dregs, always appreciate the insight.
Okay, guys, thank you.
That is Darren Dreger at TSN Hockey Insider. This Hockey Insider is brought to you by Finance It, monthly payment plans for big dreams and everyday budgets. Some Leafs news when we return. I know I asked you guys this question a couple weeks ago with regards to the Leafs and their expansion players that they can protect, and we had a little bit of just some debate on who would they use their numbers on. Who would they actually protect? Would you protect some of the guys right now who are with the Marlies because you're looking at the future, they're younger, maybe you see that potential and you want to just keep them around longer, or, you know, do you expose them and have them go? And on the flip side, maybe do you expose some veterans who are currently on the NHL team? And one name we brought up was Matt Martin. He was asked about that. He gave his thoughts on if he were to be exposed in the upcoming expansion draft. So we'll discuss that when we return here on Leafs Lunch as you continue to listen on TSN 1050 and TSN.ca. They'll rescue you from your car lease. Lease Busters. Heroic, maybe, helpful, totally. People would love to take over your car lease for your lease relief. Go to leasebusters.com. Welcome back into Leafs Lunch here on TSN 1050. Streaming online, tsn.ca, and on the iHeartRadio app. Annie Petrillo alongside Dave Poole and Craig Button. Covering a lot of hockey topics today. When it comes to the Leafs, by the way, it was also announced. And I know some people may say, well, why didn't you mention it earlier? And it came out a few days ago. And we know that the Washington Capitals and Toronto Maple Leafs are going to play an outdoor game March 3rd in Maryland. It's going to be at the U.S. Service Academy, 34,000-seat stadium.
Very cool little stadium, by the way.
Going to be cool. And this is another topic that we've, you know, discussed in the past on whether the outdoor games have just kind of lost their allure a little bit.
Think BMO Field. That's what that stadium's like.
And BMO Field was fun. But I also think BMO Field was fun because it was 100 years. There was just a little bit more to it. There was a little bit more symbolism, emotional attachment, I feel, to that
for
game.
Who?
Well, obviously, if you're a Leafs fan.
Well, guess what? In every game that's been outdoors, there's been significant involvement by the fans and the community and the teams involved. Every single one.
That's who the game is for.
And that's who it's for.
Yeah, to me, I treat it like the All-Star Weekend. It's for the host city.
So why does it matter? What symbolism do we need?
But I'm just saying, if you're going to, okay, so they're playing an outdoor game. Like, okay.
Yeah, and the fans in Washington are thrilled.
Like, I just kind of shrug my shoulders and
no,
go, okay.
You do.
The
you
rest
do.
Of the league does.
Yeah.
But in Washington, it's a big thing. And in St. Louis last year, it was a massive thing.
It's an event.
Yeah, it is. And
it's
so,
not just a game.
I don't think we should diminish it in any way, shape, or form.
So you're still all for the outdoor games? You
I think
still
they're
like
great.
Them?
I think they're events. I think they're awesome. You take something and you put it in different markets. You're going to a situation with the Washington Capitals and Toronto. I think that's awesome. I think it's great. I think it was the St. Louis Blues have been in the league for 50 years. They got great alumni. What they did last year was phenomenal. Now, I know the history of the St. Louis Blues. I don't expect other people to know the history, but I think it's great.
So March 3rd, that game is going to be played. Closer, obviously. I mean, you could say at that point, you know, it's going to be a good run on whether or not, a good indication of whether or not the Toronto Maple Leafs are making another run for the playoffs. So here's just another question, and I guess maybe it's, you know, you guys would know this, and as former player and somebody who managed teams, does the timing of when some of these games happen also matter? Because something I hear from a lot of players is that your routine's thrown off, right? You can't deny that your routine's thrown off. It is more of a spectacle. So your practice the day before is meant to be watched by all these people, and then you have your family come, and then you do the whole skate with the family. Media gets to go out there. You're right. It's a few days event. So the fact that it's March 3rd, when the Toronto Maple Leafs...
You would hope it wouldn't affect that one out of 82 games doesn't affect your playoff.
Yeah.
Grouping, but
you would hope, but I'm just looking at the fact that it's March 3rd. So if you're
late,
and
that's
the
latest
Capitals.
I've seen one, right?
Yeah, so if you're the Washington Capitals as well, Toronto Maple Leafs.
A couple of years ago, wasn't there one? And right near the end of February.
Really
yeah, it
me.
Does seem late. I agree with you.
Because you would just hate that the elements affected, the sight lines were affected. Like, I'm just wondering.
Even geographically,
if,
that's further south than you think it is.
And Dan Craig has done an amazing job with the ice, yes. But that's still, you're dealing with Mother Nature.
And the idea of the big event is you're attracting the casual hockey fan or the non-hockey fan to an event and growing them into hockey fans. I mean, that's the beauty of it in individual areas.
I was amazed last year how that routine really affected Austin Matthews in that game at BMO.
Hey, come on. They were really actually down, and they had they launched a massive comeback.
Kid
no, but
from Arizona.
To me, it's more about the timing. It's just more about when it is that late where you really just have a month to go in the season, and you know that this is where you're really figuring out down the stretch if, you know, you're either completely in the playoffs, completely out of it, or you're fighting tooth and nail to the end. Does it actually affect players? Like, would the Leafs and Capitals have been like, you know what, if that game was in January, February, sure, no problem. But does the fact that it's March bother them?
Here's what I would answer to that, to just piggybacking Dave's comment. If that affects your team, you've got bigger problems.
All right, so there's your answer. I guess we'll find out on March 3rd where the Leafs will be at that point, and even the Capitals. And
March 3rd could easily be 65 degrees in D.C. Easily.
Oh, I want to go to that game then.
Easily. Could be a beautiful day.
Yeah, let's go to that game.
Sunglasses.
So something we're going to really get into pretty heavily as the weeks go on here, the expansion draft, and the protected lists are going to be coming out. What is that, June 17th we're going to hear about the team?
Craig is all over this.
I don't think we're going to hear about it. I think
that's when they have to have it in?
They have to have them submitted, and then I think they're going to be released prior. Well, I don't think. They're going to be released prior to the expansion draft, but there's teams have to put their list in, and then Vegas gets it. And then Vegas is going to pick their team within a time frame, right? And then it gets announced after that. Now, within that period of time that they're selecting their team, the lists are going to be exposed. Now, when exactly that happens, I'm not sure.
And there's a free agent window in that exact same time frame where they can talk to free agents, UFAs.
It just got extended by 24 hours.
Yes.
Yeah. So now they'll have 3 days, right?
72 hours.
Pierre LeBrun just tweeted out the details of
it. A lot of moving parts.
Well, they're trying their best to make sure that an expansion team succeeds, giving them, you know, allowing them to cut whatever corners they can, get the benefit of the doubt, helping them out.
I don't think what's interesting to me, Andy, and having been through all the expansions in the 90s and, you know, right up into 2000, what's always fascinating about it, okay, is how the other teams get involved, because all the teams are involved in this, not just from what they got to do to put their lists in and who's exposed and who they want to move, but how they can take advantage. Because there's lots of opportunities for every other team to take advantage.
Yeah.
And there's lots of opportunities for them to take advantage in free agency.
Well, I've looked at your preliminary list, and if I were another team, I'd be looking at some guys in that preliminary list and saying, that guy's better than somebody we got back there.
And what we're going to be doing is we're going to be moving through this list over time here at TSN, and you'll be a part of it. We'll all be a part of it. But so the other teams are looking at this and going, do we have an opportunity to improve our team? And they can do that through free agency, too. Hey, you know what? Sign this guy for us in Vegas. We don't have to worry about it. We know we got him, right? We make a trade after. There's lots of movement, and there's lots of things that I shouldn't say haven't been contemplated. That wouldn't be right. But the teams are very, very creative in terms of trying to use. So, hey, this doesn't happen very often, right?
And they've given them enough time and a set of rules early enough that everybody can manipulate them.
Tell them your idea, Dave. I thought your idea was good last time.
Yeah, they should get it two days before the list of rules, so they don't have time to massacre the rules in every way they're written. Here's the rules. Here's the list. Here's the expansion draft. Boom, go. Because they've had so much time to beat these up and figure out ways around it.
Okay.
Unintended results.
And it's 30 teams trying to ensure that Vegas gets as little quality as possible.
Yeah, the league might be instituting certain rules to help them, but that doesn't mean
they find ways
the other
them,
teams
Andy.
Are trying to help them. So the Leafs, as we know, are in a very good position when it comes to who they have to protect, because they do have a lot of guys who haven't played the full 3 years yet, right? So if you've played less than three, you don't have to be protected. And that's a lot of guys right now on the Toronto Maple Leafs roster. In fact, you know, the guys who thrilled us all last year in your William Nylander and your Mitch Marner and your Auston Matthews. Even Nikita Zaitsev does not now need to be protected.
24-year-old, right? Like, which is pretty significant.
So, but now the question then becomes, you know, they're probably going to go the route of the 7-3-1, right? The seven forwards, three defensemen, and the goalie. So when you take a look, they're still in a very good position, but the question then becomes, some of the guys on the NHL roster right now could be exposed if they were to choose to protect guys like a Kirby Reichel, Brendan Leipsic, who are maybe considered part of the future, considered guys they want to give a chance to come on up. But then who gets exposed at that expense? Does it become Matt Martin?
Let me take Matt Martin on head on here. I think his value will increase with this year's playoffs and the way things are being called. And as people realize, you know, when the Leafs are in a position to go deeper into the playoffs, that value will be even more so than his value is right now. He plays a very important role for that team. He simply does. And judging by my past and my history as a player, I know well what it's like to go out there feeling that, you know, there's that safe piece of it. And if they're going to call the games like they're calling them right now, his value is going to increase, not decrease.
I'm going to add a couple things to that. Number one, Mike Babcock said he keeps the flies off the kids. Well, I mean, we can debate Matt Martin from now until next year about what he does. The bottom line is the Leafs signed him because they value him, and clearly Mike Babcock values him. So now to the argument about the kids. Let me just see. How about the kids that are named Nylander, Matthews, Marner, Brown? That's who they're caring about. Mm-hmm. And quite frankly, Kirby Reichel and Brendan Leipzig, to me, are not certain NHL players in any way, shape, or form. I don't see it happening in Toronto. I just don't. That doesn't mean it won't. I just don't see it happening, right? And so who's more important to the young kids and to the future of the organization? Matthews, Nylander, Marner, all those guys that they believe Matt Martin provides value to. So that's the end. That's how I see it.
So let's just hypothetically, if we were to say here are the seven forwards that they would protect, you would say Nazem Kadri, James Van Riemsdyk, Tyler Bozak, Leo Komarov, Connor Brown, and then you would put in Matt Martin. Would you put in Josh Levo?
You must have read my list.
Is that what you got in there? So there you go. Those are your guys. So whoever is eligible, who have been playing with the Marlies.
They traded for Eric Fair. And they just signed Ben Smith. Yep. Those give them the two forwards that meet the expansion rule requirements to be exposed.
So there you go.
And then they have Marincin to be exposed. They have Alexei Marchenko to be exposed. So they got no problems.
Does it bother you, the argument? Because I know it was even happening last night as well when I was looking at some of the Twitter feeds. Like, there are still a lot of people out there when it comes to Matt Martin. Don't like what he's making for the points he puts up. Obviously, there seems to be a lot of times that's the first thing you look at, right? You look at what someone makes, and then automatically you look at offensive production. And I know, Pooley, you were just saying, like, sometimes, you know, especially given what's happening in these playoffs, and we heard Jimmy Rutherford say what he said about, you know, a lot of the stars need to be protected. We know what Mike Babcock has said about Matt Martin. And we even know, speaking of outdoor games, it was that game at BMO Field where Austin Matthews says the turning point was when Matt Martin dropped the gloves. Leafs were down and out. They were losing that game. Well, they were down 4-1, and Matt Martin gets the fight. And Austin Matthews after the game says, that was Martin. He got us going. So does it annoy you that we have to keep having this conversation with people to say sometimes you can't just look at the production because there are intangibles there that are hard to put into words and only the players on the team understand, and it is valuable?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of ways to be right, Andy. I don't think that there's one form of team that's going to give you more success than another team. I mean, we've seen teams win. I remember in 07 when the Anaheim Ducks won the Stanley Cup, and Brian Burke said, well, we've clearly shown that this is the way to go, and you're going to see a lot of teams copying us. Well, the Detroit Red Wings didn't copy them, and they won the Stanley Cup the next year. It doesn't mean that the Anaheim Ducks style was wrong. It doesn't mean that the Detroit Red Wings style is wrong. They're different, and people have different philosophies, and I think that's what makes the game really neat, because there are different philosophies. And, you know, I'm reminded again, I go back to a comment Bob Gainey said many years ago. He goes, we can sit here and talk about toughness or whatnot. And he goes, if the players feel more comfortable with toughness and they feel more comfortable with it being around them, then that matters. And you better recognize that, even if you don't believe that it matters. So as a manager, as a coach, you have to, and there might be a time, think about the Detroit Red Wings. They went through a phase, they went through a stretch where they had Probert and all those guys, and they had success. But then they worked their way past that phase where they didn't need those guys because, you know, maybe through the cycle, right, those guys provided everything that the players needed. But at a point in time, they felt there was a need for it and a necessity. So there's even an evolution to it, too, within an organization. So I think it's too easy to dismiss players on points or this or that. You know, it's an overall team concept. And if the whole idea is to put your players in the best position to succeed and they have a sense of comfort with it, You better not dismiss it.
I think the LA Kings are a great example, and they sort of changed the trend on heavy. It was probably the Bruins first in 2011, and then the LA Kings were winning with heavy, and a lot of teams went heavy. And then all of a sudden, Pittsburgh said, we can outskate heavy, and they blew them away with speed. And and so then teams said, okay, we got to get faster. Well, when you're faster, you're susceptible to heavy. So it's all a cycle. I mean, think about it. It's being a little bit ahead of that curve that wins for people.
Yeah, well, and understanding what you are. Matt, I always laugh about the Philadelphia Flyers when they won the Stanley Cups in 1974 and 75. Now, regardless of what you think about the Broad Street Bullies, they had 50 goal scorers in Rick McLeish and Reggie Leach, MVP. Hall of Famers in Bobby Clark and Billy Barber. I mean, go look at their blue line. And I mean, they had, I mean, you look at the skill.
They had a goalie.
And Bernie Perron. I mean, their defense was really good. I mean, nobody even remembers. Like, I mean, how, I mean, Jimmy Watson, Joey.
Jimmy and Joey were both there. But Jimmy was really, really good player. Ed Van Am. Yeah.
I mean, they were really, but. You know, the idea of how they played, right? Don't tell me that team didn't have massive skill.
Some very good players.
So I never got your opinion because we brought this up on yesterday's show. Paul Coffey, when he was at an event, basically said that he was happy, you know, paraphrasing here, but happy that the Ottawa Senators didn't make it to the Stanley Cup final when Kunitz got the OT goal. He said the game is safe because he doesn't like the style that Ottawa plays. And he said, monkey see, monkey do. To your point, Pooley, whoever wins the Stanley Cup the year before, you look and say, okay, that's what got them the win. Whether they were a heavy team, whether they were a speedy team rolling all four lines, you tend to then try to build your team around that. What do you make of his comments there about the Sens?
Well, think of the way Coff played. I mean, you know, he loved the get-up-and-go game. Well, you can do that, once again, when you have eight Hall of Famers on your team. You know, I'd love to look up Eisen as an offensive defenseman and have some options to pass to, named Curry, Gretzky, Anderson, Messier, you know, on down the line. So it didn't surprise me at all. But once again, Ottawa played very much like Nashville played last night in many senses. And Ottawa can pull back within that and look more defensive, but they can also be very aggressive with that system. Ottawa has Erik Karlsson. They don't have Curry, Gretzky, Messier, Anderson. Mm-hmm. You know, they just don't have those guys. Kent Nielsen, I mean, took skill. So they played the way they had to play to win. And a coach has a job. His livelihood depends on it. He's going to coach in the most effective manner. And Guy Boucher was brought in to teach that defensive system because they already had offensive elements. So it was to combine what they already did well with what they do. You know, I look at the success of Peter Laviolette. A lot of Peter Laviolette's success is because Barry Trotz ingrained a defensive structure into that group of guys. And then Peter Laviolette gets to Nashville and says, okay, let's go. So the ingrained defense is already there because of the last coach. And it hasn't left them, but they're freed up to play more aggressively with that defense.
I haven't been around, I mean, rarely. I really can't even think of a specific example where a coach wanted less skill as opposed to more skill. Mm-hmm. I think what ends up happening is within the framework of different types of players, who can have a greater impact on the game in their minds about it, right? It's not to say that Matt Martin can't have an impact, and people say, well, look, he doesn't have any points. And it's not to say that the guy that scores 20 goals but might not be heavy, might have to, you know, be in better situations, can't be successful. It's all looking at within in the framework of what your team. But honestly, I haven't heard a coach say, yeah, give me less skill. Never heard it. You, Dave?
No. So also coming out of Washington, just quickly, no coaching changes out of Washington. Brian McClellan basically saying Barry Trotz and his crew will be back, that the past should not come back and haunt the team.
No captaincy change as well, just came out.
And there you go. So no captaincy change. It will continue to be Alex Ovechkin. Gentlemen, it was a slice. Craig Button, Dave Poulin, I'm Annie Petrillo. The Scott MacArthur Show is coming up next here on TSN 1050. Stay with us.